Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Worker's Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher with the National Coalition of Labor, and here with me is Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Good morning,
Phil. Good morning, Ed. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm exhausted from a long day of celebrating St. Patrick's Day, early St. Patrick's Day celebrations yesterday. How about you?
Feeling a little sluggish this morning. It's been a wild day and more to continue. Unfortunately, yeah, in terrible
side,
weather.
Right. Northwest side.
I'll be at the Northwest Side Parade.
It's a good parade.
It's a great parade. It's growing, but it's going to be horrible weather. So
yeah, there's
dress for the conditions and the elements.
There's good parades and great parades, but yesterday we were out at the greatest St. Patrick's Day parade in Chicago, not to mention the longest running. That's the Chicago Working Families Archer Avenue St. Patrick's Day Parade, where me, Phil, and Ken were the official announcers of the parade.
Quite an honor.
We had a media tower. We were interviewing people. We were heckling people in the parade.
Did it get canceled, amazingly?
We did not get canceled.
Yeah.
It added a whole new element. The all the people who came out despite the cold weather,
yes,
brought the kids out, and you know, people were throwing candy. It was an awesome time. Still got a great crowd. The crowd seemed to enjoy our little bit of humor. But most importantly, the parade raised a lot of money. I don't think they have a figure yet, but their honorary grand marshals were Officer Crystal Rivera from the Chicago Police Department and Captain David Meyer from the Chicago Fire Department, both of who lost their lives in the past year or so.
In the line of duty, right.
Right, keeping in tradition with what this parade does, they raised money for those folks and for public safety, first responders. And this parade it's like Chicago's union parade.
It is.
A lot of the unions from the area are down there. A lot of the contractors bring out heavy equipment. It's a good time. It's like the Chicago mobile version of Construction Expo, which just wrapped up in Las Vegas. So
yeah.
But always a pleasure to participate in that. We had so much fun that Ken's not here today.
Yeah, go figure.
So where do you think Ken is, Phil?
I'm going to say he's in the fetal position underneath the covers in bed.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. So we miss you, Ken, and Ken will be back next
week. Mainlining liquid IV.
Do you use liquid IV?
Yeah, I have.
I drink liquid IV all the time.
Okay.
And it's not because of hangovers. I'll drink the
drink it
like crazy when I'm sick, but I drink it all the time, and I love it. I'm like a little kid, though. I drink the popsicle flavor.
Get those electrolytes coursing through your veins?
Right?
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I see a lot of people walking around with big water bottles, like everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm like a cactus. I drink a ton of water when I get thirsty, but I'll
absorb it.
Yeah, I'll just go the whole day and there's like no water. You know, I'm just waiting to like sneeze and dust comes out or something like that.
That's funny.
I'm not very well hydrated.
You store it.
Yeah. I guess maybe not like a cactus.
Like a camel?
Like a camel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been compared to a camel before, but all right, moving right along. Speaking of people who weren't here, Phil, you weren't with us last week, and we made some jokes about you being out golfing and, you know, stuck in traffic and
yes,
oversleeping, and you didn't really take that very kindly.
Well, how cruel and heartless of you.
Yeah.
Because, in actuality, I was at the funeral services for the late, great Vicki Beasley, who is the mother of former Mid-America Carpenters Vice President and now United Brotherhood of Carpenters Chief of Staff Wade Beasley.
Wade's a dear friend of the show.
Condolences
out to him on the loss of his mother.
Yeah, very sorry for his loss. His mother was a great person. Obviously, big union supporter. Their union roots run very deep down that area. Wade's, he grew up in 174 area. That's the local down there. He grew up in Yorkville.
Okay.
And his mom was a big presence in that community. And
nice.
I'm
still going to make fun of you every time you're not at the show. Just, it doesn't matter why you're not here. We'll come up with some sort of a fake reason.
I'm sure I will hear.
Like you fell out of the media tower at the parade yesterday. And
well, you'll have to compete with Ken playing the golf sound effect because that's. Does anyone love that joke as much as Ken? I don't think it's possible.
I don't think so. But we've got a pretty big show today. There's a lot going on, and we have a guest who's going to be calling in in the next segment. Brian Anderson, the business manager from the Electricians Union down in Champaign, they're having some issues with a contractor that's coming in and trying to bring a bunch of out-of-state workers, and the folks in Champaign are not happy about it. So it's an important thing to kind of nip in the bud, and certainly looking forward to talking to him in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And then one quick update, something that we touched on in last week's show was WNBA. You may be familiar with it.
Very familiar.
They are trying to get the season started on time.
Okay.
And, they have, you know, been trying to negotiate, and it sounds like they're making some progress because they spent, I think, a 12-hour day this past week to try to come to an agreement. They didn't get there, but they have more negotiations this coming week. So don't worry, listeners. The WNBA season will probably start on time.
Phew.
And we can go out there and see Caitlin Clark destroy Angel Reese, and Angel Reese complain that Angel Clark's not, or Angel Reese complain that Caitlin Clark's not actually that good. And in the middle of it all, there will be people playing basketball.
Yes.
Aside from the wonderful
drama. But now there's that WNBA new player, Paige, who played for UConn. Packers, I want to say.
I got to be honest, I've been out of college basketball, both male and female.
She was a tournament superstar, and I think she's kind of one of the new faces of the WNBA. She's a player. So
that's awesome.
Caitlin Clark, hey, she's a fellow Hawkeye. I've got a ton of respect for her, but it's not just the Caitlin Clark show anymore.
Every sport, you have to have big talent coming in every year if it's going to be sustainable. And the fact that they have big talent coming in, it means people will watch, people will go to games, and hopefully the players will continue to get paid. So I hope the fact that there are big names coming in every year means that these folks are going to get a good contract.
Let's go.
So, all right, well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will be here with Brian Anderson from the IBEW Local 601 out of Champaign, Illinois. So stay with us right here on 720 WGN for more Workers' Mic.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Ed Maher, here with Phil Davidson. And on the phone, we've got a guest. It's Brian Anderson. He is the business manager of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 601, that is based out of Champaign, Illinois. So welcome to the show, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I should say Local 601 has been a member of the National Coalition of Labor for a couple of years now. And you guys have, you guys have always been a pretty hard fighting local. So, hats off to you for everything that you do.
Yeah. Shout out.
Yeah. So, appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, earlier this week, there was some reporting out of downstate on a project going on. I think it's a private project on the U of I campus. And why don't you kind of tell us, Brian, what's going on here and what the problem is?
Well, so we've got, like you said, a private development down here on campus for housing, which is a booming industry on any big campus. They can never seem to build enough apartment buildings for these places. So we've got a private development here. The developer or the general contractor on this is a PC Treehouse. But it's actually managed by Power Construction from up where in Chicagoland.
Yeah,
area.
A huge company out of Chicago, right?
Yeah. I mean, from talking with my counterparts in the Chicagoland area, they were, you know, when I first started hearing about this project back in June or July of last year, Power Construction was a well-known entity. And so we didn't have too many concerns about them using non-union employers, because I think in the Chicagoland area, they're one of the biggest signers of the PLAs up there. And so we tracked this project all the way through. And then I think around June 8th, we found out that the electrical was going to go to a non-union contractor, Bonus Electrical Construction Company, which is based out of, it's registered in Wyoming, but the address is based out of Nashville, Tennessee.
So not even hiring a non-union electrical company, but hiring an out-of-state
non-union. Out-of-state, even worse.
Yeah, even worse. And so, of course, we started investigating where this company came from. We were familiar with Bonus Electric that's out of the Chicagoland area. And so those two similarities, we enlisted the help of the International's research department to kind of track down this. And then through our investigations, we found out that this is the son of Jay Habercorn, the CEO of Bonus Electric.
Oh, no kidding.
Chicago. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Yes. So.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, something that you see as you travel around the Midwest, and I always kind of say that unions or companies build union where they feel like they have to. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Because if you go into neighboring states around the Midwest, you'll see a lot of the big union construction companies from Chicago are operating non-union,
right.
You know, developers in those states because they can. Yeah. You know, and it's called, you know, double breasting. It seems like, you know, the U of I campus in Urbana-Champaign is a little bit close to be testing this kind of stuff out because you have solid union density still in downstate Illinois.
Yeah, we're a big union town. Our local alone has about 100 employees that are full-time electricians at the university. Mm-hmm. That university campus is our main driver of work in our local. You know, a couple hundred electricians are working on there off and on annually. So that's a big, and not just us, all the trades are strong there, you know. So it's definitely striking to see a project of this scale in the heart of campus town go to non-union electrical. And it's not just the electrical. I believe the HVAC, PC Treehouse has selected a company for the HVAC as well.
Yeah, I always think of it like in Jurassic Park where they say like the raptors are testing the fence. You know, if they can pull it off, the attempts will just get more bold. But what are you able or what are you doing at this point? You know, to try to get the job turned around.
Well, from the get go, as soon as we found out, again, like I said, we were following up with them in late December on this project and trying to make sure that our contractors were going to get a shot at it. As soon as we found out it was non-union, we told them that wasn't going to sit very well with us. I re-engaged our contractors to make sure that they would be willing to turn in bids and give another shot at it, which they were able to do that. They said, yep, we'll definitely give this a shot now that we found out that it was going to go to, non-union
out-of-state workers, right?
Yeah, out-of-state workers. And I think the confusion for them came, you know, they were confused on Bonus Electric if they were union, non-union. They had heard that Bonus Electric, the union company, had a fairly familiar relationship with Power Construction. And so I think they assumed that that's who was going to get it, and they just didn't really push very hard to bid the project. So once we got them circled around to rebid the project, we engaged with Power Construction on the opportunity for that. And they gave me the runaround for about a week and a half and then finally told me they were going to stick with the Bonus Electrical Construction Company.
Wow. Okay. So you guys hit the media over this past week and are just kind of informing people that you've got, I mean, you have folks who live there in the community that can do this work, but they're running to another state to bring people in. And the report that I saw, it said that these folks from Tennessee are getting paid roughly $25 an hour less than your members.
Yeah. So once we couldn't get this job turned around, we engaged in a publicity campaign and had a couple of rats blown up across the street from the job site, and we're handbilling. Our organizer, Jordan Mueller, had made contact with several of the employees. The main guy running the job told him he was making around $40 an hour. Our total package is in the neighborhood of 70 right now. So, you know, it's significantly less, but less about the money. It's really about the bringing in our own workers. And, you know, we've got in the neighborhood of 80 plus members out of work right now that could be working on that project,
right.
Would be working on that project if even if a out of town union contractor came in, we would definitely have some of our people on that project.
Yeah, keeping that money within the community.
Absolutely.
The sales tax they pay, the income tax they pay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's all going to go back to Tennessee now. So
I think
we're going to miss out on that.
It's such an important message for when something like this isn't, you know, you're not getting any traction with the developers. It is such an important message to bring to sort of the local electeds and to the public to put a little bit of pressure, because ultimately, you know, the elected officials down there are accountable to the people in the community. And if there are people watching projects get awarded and approved that are going to, you know, put folks from other states to work while they sit home, you know, that just can't fly. Not only you have breath in your lungs and some fight in your, you know, in your heart, right?
Right. And there's other work on the project that is union, right, Brian?
Well, yeah. So the other contractors, I know we've got the plumbing is going to be done by a good contractor. I think the form work and the iron workers are all good contractors right now. So for now, it's just this one electrical contractor that's bad. I think the operators are good on the project. So, you know, we've been raising a lot of eyeballs with those members over there with our publicity campaign. So we'll see what happens here going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, keep up the fight, and we'll certainly keep an eye on it. And if there's any updates or anything that that you need folks to do, we're happy to get you back on the show. So, tell us a little bit. Just how many members have you got in Local 601?
Well, I think we were just looking at that about a month ago, getting ready for our audit process here at the local, and I think we're actually at 601 members. So
you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it's a. I told the organizer, no more. You got to hold it right here for a little bit so we can take a snapshot of that. But we'll be looking to expand here. We've just wrapped up our interview process for the apprenticeship. We'll be looking to grow, and you know, we've got a busy summer and probably another good year of busy work. We got a lot of other work on campus, so it's going to be busy times for us.
How many apprentices do you usually bring in every year?
That's a varying number, just depending on the workflow. Somewhere between 10 and 20 generally is what we take in each year. And then we use an alternate classification for market recovery, the CECWs. Right. I don't think the Chicagoland area uses that, but we've used that to pretty good success on these on projects, honestly, like this, where we know that the non-union is competing with us on these residential areas, on these multi-family, multi-unit complexes. And we have great success with that down here. So,
yeah, I mean, earlier in the conversation, you were saying that your members make roughly, was it $70 an hour total package? And that's wages, that's healthcare, that's retirement.
Yeah,
that's everything. Right. But it's, you know, you're creating an employee, a worker who is going to be self-sustainable, is going to, you know, have their own healthcare, going to be able to save for retirement, and is going to make enough money that they're not, you know, on welfare or going to food pantries and stuff like that. So that's what the union does for the community, is every year you bring in 10 or 20 more people from the community and you give them this opportunity. And so I'm hoping that these local policy makers will get involved and, you know, do a little something for the brothers and sisters in the area there and help them get back to work.
Yeah. Not to mention power construction generates more than $1 billion in revenue every year.
Is that right?
This is a big company. Yes.
Yeah, they're not small. And,
no, it's, you know, not a small fry.
This is one of those things where it's just, if they're going to try to do this, you got to show them that not happening in Champaign.
Right.
It could take it back to Tennessee.
Yeah, exactly. Like you were saying, you see this all over the country, usually not this close to home from these contractors. So I definitely think they're testing us. Mm-hmm. But they're going to get a fight from us. There's not many things more important than this for Local 601 right now. So we're gonna give it everything we got.
Well, you know, God bless you, and good luck with the fight. And we'll keep in touch and report back any updates to our listeners that we hear on this. So thanks again so much for coming in. We really appreciate you joining us on a Sunday morning, Brian.
Yeah, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for having me on and bringing this issue to the public up there. I really appreciate that.
All right, you got it. Take care, Brian. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with more Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Workers' Mic. More show to come, sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher, and I'm here with Phil Davidson. Good interview. I enjoyed that. I hope that they hope that they're able to get a win. I hope the policymakers down in Champaign step in and say, hey, we've got to look after people in this community.
Yeah, they're all the, I know the mayor, the county board there, certainly the state lawmakers, they're all very labor-friendly and supportive, so I can see them
usually
getting involved.
In university towns.
Right.
You know what I mean? I read something this week from The Guardian, which I thought was like a British publication.
It is.
I think it originated there. But
they're always asking for money, and I give them some money.
Yeah, there's certain... I do pay for news. I never used to, but I pay sort of the few remaining good ones.
Yeah, because they do a good job, and yeah, that work doesn't come free, because it's one of the very few free online publications.
That's true.
It's totally free, so they do the donation model, and yeah, if you're going to be reading their content that they spend a lot of time and effort creating, then throw them something for it.
For sure, which is ironic because I stopped donating to Wikipedia because they restricted the ability of the public to just enter fraudulent information. I was trying to put in there that the Pope had a union card, and they said, you can't edit the Pope's Wikipedia page, and I'm like...
You've lost me.
You calling me a liar, Wikipedia?
You've lost me, Wikipedia.
Yeah,
yes.
My $5 annual... You know,
Jimmy Wales or whatever, is that the guy's name?
Anyhow, this Guardian report was saying that the way to handle the political failures in America, or the sort of societal breakdowns, is simple: run more union members. So I said, well,
amen.
You've got my attention.
Yes.
And basically, the way that the argument, which I found pretty compelling, was that about 5% of congressional seats in the last 23 years, I think, between Democrats and Republicans, had a union card. So only 5% of
5%.
Candidates. Not 5% of Congress people, but just 5% of the people running for it. And a lot of the reason that Congress's approval ratings are so abysmal, I mean, in addition to not being able to get anything done, and in large part these days by not, like, protecting their constitutional power at all.
Insider trading.
They're not relatable. You know, they don't come from working families. They don't have working class backgrounds. They don't necessarily understand the issues that are facing ordinary folks sitting at their kitchen tables.
I'm pretty sure the average net worth of your member of Congress is like $1.5 million or something. It's
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're just not super relatable. So it went through this whole argument, which I really enjoyed. It was a good read. It's in The Guardian. It's called Run More Union Members. But something that was sort of prominent in there was that in New Jersey and in Alaska, the state AFL-CIOs, not the federal out of Washington, but the state branches, have their own labor candidate schools where they take, you know, members, union members who are interested in public policy, and they kind of show them the ropes of, like, how to, you know, file, how to get nominated, how to get petitions signed. And they're being successful. Two-thirds of the candidates that have run out of Alaska's labor candidate school have won.
Yep.
And, you know, we talk on this show a decent amount. The Illinois AFL-CIO, they come on all the time. Tim Dre and, you know, all of his folks, Pat Devaney, the staff, they do a great job. And we love them. But at the same time, we don't see a whole lot coming out of Washington with the AFL-CIO. You know what I mean? It's there's a lot of defense. And instead of just playing defense and let's pick the least bad candidate that we can, you know, we're going to side with the lesser of two evils and just hope that things work out okay. You know, we should be taking advantage of what the labor movement has, and that's people.
Yes.
Good people who work hard, you know, and care about trying to, you know, help others provide a good living. You know, there's my call to action of the week to the National AFL-CIO. Take a page from this. It's working. It's helping. And it really would be a good thing if more people who struggled with the economic, you know, uncertainties and struggles that ordinary folks have, if they were in a position to maybe get a say in things. I think they would represent people of all political stripes a little bit better than some of these clowns in Congress.
So. Yeah, and the trades themselves. You can start your own candidate schools. I know
for sure my
union does. Yeah. At the international level, they have seminars. A lot of our regional councils have their own separate programs to recruit potential candidates for office. And get them trained about everything that goes into running a campaign, because obviously it's a lot. If you it's one thing to have the idea for it, but to build infrastructure around it, to learn how to fundraise, to learn how to schedule, to learn how to create a platform that's going to be have a winning message is a lot. So there's we have several boot camps for stuff like that, and it's growing. We recently just did a rundown of all of our members who are elected officials at both state and local levels.
Right.
And I think throughout our council, we have almost 50 now. Some state reps. We've got several members of local town boards and village trustees. And then we've got a few county board members. So, yeah, and obviously when you have that representation on a board, you're making sure that unions have a seat at the table, especially when it comes to budgetary items, when it comes to capital expenditures. It's always good to make sure that labor has a voice, and who could be better than, you know, members of your own union. So I think, I mean, it's a great idea, and you're right. I think it really does resonate with people. Who was it? Dan Osborne, who ran for Senate in Nebraska, a red state. He came really close. And he ran as an independent, but he ran as a very pro-labor union member. And then there's a guy running in Maine who's becoming like one of the new faces of the new Democratic Party, and whose name is made national headlines, you know, almost on a daily basis. Plattner, Graham Plattner, oyster fisherman, I believe.
Sounds like a smelly job.
It does sound like a smelly job. Longshoreman, but he's yeah, he's out in Maine, and he's got a tough primary against the former governor up there. But
and then we've got I can't remember his name, but the guy down in Texas. There's a candidate down there who just won in a primary, kind of shocked.
Oh, Tallarico?
Yeah, yeah.
James Tallarico, yes.
Yeah, he was so successful that CBS wouldn't even broadcast his interview with
Stephen Colbert, correct.
People would like it.
But yeah, it doesn't, I mean, that's the one thing that we know, especially with our experience with the Workers' Rights Amendment, with what happened with efforts to turn Missouri right to work is, union messaging works in every county across every demographic.
For sure.
It does. Like, you can go, I think, in Illinois, even the reddest of counties supported the Workers' Rights Amendment. So if you're a candidate, that is a really strong platform to run on, and you're absolutely spot on. We need more of that.
Yeah, I mean, if my choice of candidates is someone who has, you know, dealt with budgeting in their family, or who has worked in an organization where they're trying to help people who are struggling get ahead, and you give me a choice between that person and some guy who, you know, just graduated out of University of Chicago Graduate School of Business or something like that,
well, just
who's going to help me more?
Exactly.
I'm going to say, like, somebody who can relate to, you know, to the things that workers are dealing with. And it really happens at all levels. It's not like you just scoop up a member out of left field and say, hey, you want to run for Congress? Because, you know, to your point, all politics is local.
Yep.
And we, at the Operating Engineers, we used to find members because they, every township in Illinois, we've got this wacky township system.
We do.
That I don't know if other states, I think there's a couple other states that have it, but it's a very, very
don't
interesting.
Don't we have more forms of government than any state in the
it's
nation?
It's a lot of extra government, but these townships have highway commissioners, right?
Yeah.
And they oversee the sort of unincorporated roads.
That's right.
In a lot of places when they were building wind farms and things like that, these highway commissioners had a lot of control over these roads.
Yes.
And, you know, if there were folks who were going to be coming in, developers from out of state, saying we're bringing in a workforce from Alabama to build this wind farm, those local officials had a lot of say in that. And we would, you know, routinely say that in most situations, you'll get some, you'll get more help from a highway commissioner than you'll get from a United
States
senator.
That's a great point. And it's often an overlooked position.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're a member who's out there and you're interested in running for something, call your union and
get involved.
If they don't have a program, get in touch with us. We'll connect you with somebody because, you know, instead of worrying about who's using what bathrooms, who's, you know, playing what sports, I mean, you know, not to say those issues don't have merit for discussion, but I don't think they belong at the very top of the political discussion when, you know, folks don't have money to retire, can't afford their medication. You know, are feeding themselves out of food boxes from food pantries. You know, we've got things that need to be dealt with more urgently than some of this divisive social nonsense that both parties are all about.
But kitchen table issues.
Yeah, we'll have to sort all that out when we're finished with this little, like, World War III skirmish.
Oh, that whole thing, yes.
We've got going on that, you know, I'm just really hoping that all this sort of works out somehow quickly, but who knows. But there was, speaking of, you know, barren wastelands, you saw some news about Mississippi, was it?
Well, that's a 10 out of 10 transition there, Ed.
Why, thank you.
Nice segue. Yes. The people, I'm not going to say, well, hey, I like the people who live in Mississippi.
There are a lot of good people in Mississippi.
There's great.
It was what I call a joke.
It was. It was a great joke. No, but I'm saying they have the residents there. My hat's off to you. Mm-hmm. The leadership, I'm not as big of a fan of.
Fewer states need more help than Mississippi from their leaders. I mean, it's one of the poorest states in America, one of the lowest wage states.
I think
in America
has the highest per capita murder rate of any state. I know certainly Jackson, Mississippi has the highest by far murder rate of any city in America. And yes, one of the highest drawing Medicaid states in the country. Yes, there's a lot of help needed there. You know, a blatantly rapidly right to work state. Like maybe as right to work as they come, and that's not enough for the lawmakers of Mississippi. They just introduced a new bill that would ban employers from recognizing unions solely by card check, which is practiced pretty much everywhere else,
right,
and would instead require a secret ballot election. And in addition, they went even further, and they're banning companies from giving union employee contact information without written consent from the employees. And this was tied to legislation that would say these are the rules to follow if you want any type of economic grant or state subsidy from the state. So, you know, the deck is already stacked in Mississippi. Like, how far do you need to go with this to make it more, as they say, business friendly when the people of your state are struggling, who are desperate, in certain dire straits financially? And again, okay, so you make it the most business-friendly state in America. What does that get you when your population can't afford to pay their bills and is living in poverty? Like, what's the end result there? I don't understand it.
Well, yeah, the whole trickle-down thing, if there's anybody who still believes
it's in not working.
Down economics, you know, I've got a bridge to sell.
Exactly.
You, but, the business-friendly thing has to be viewed in what it is. If
right.
you're pro-business, most of what that means is at the expense of workers.
Yes.
You know, you can say, like, we're pro-business, we're going to bring all these companies here, we're going to bring all these jobs here. And, you know, in a lot of cases, there's a lot of truth to that. If you have companies relocating to different places, that's great. It creates opportunity if those companies are acting responsibly. But what they're talking about doing here in Mississippi, I mean, this mirrors some of the proposals from Congress on what they wanted to do to federal labor laws with, you know, hey, union is trying to unionize this company. The company's cool with it. They like it. They think it's no big, you know, they don't have anything to lose. They're fine. They can sign off on that. They
right.
can do voluntary recognition, except not anymore because the government's going to force them to have an election.
Right.
And let's remember, that's not to say this election's going to be fair, because in states like Tennessee and Mississippi and Alabama, you've had elections for, you know, United Auto Workers or, you know, other big industrial unions where you have, like, pastors and local government officials getting involved in these elections saying,
yeah.
vote no.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You don't have a dog in the
captive
fight.
Audience meetings.
And all it boils down to is trying to stop unions from organizing, stop workers from becoming unionized. And why is that? Because unions are proven time and time again to be the most effective vehicle for workers to get from poverty into the solid middle class. And business friendly. They think business friendly means you can't have that.
The legislation would also ban neutrality agreements. Like
banning oh my goodness. I mean, since when does you know, conservative small government
exactly.
stop businesses from making their own decisions?
Isn't that their First Amendment right to decide whether or not they want to
That's a good point.
Allow their employees to collectively bargain? Like,
it's a good point. I wonder where that as you well know, I'm no lawyer, but I wonder where that plays in you know, to say, like, you can't qualify for grants if you you know, or have a neutrality agreement where you say you won't interfere with workers if they are trying to, you know, decide whether they want a union or not. We should ask. I wish Ken was here. We'll talk to him next week about
that. Because he would find a lawyer who could actually answer that.
I bet he knows. I bet Ken knows a lot about that. Actually, you'd be shocked the wealth of legal.
He is good. He is good at that. I kid. But it's just cool. That's what I want to say to the people, the lawmakers from Mississippi. Great job. This is really going to work out for you guys. I mean,
who needs a time machine when you can just go to Mississippi?
Are there a lot of businesses clamoring to open up shop in Mississippi?
There might be.
You know,
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't read a lot about big corporate headquarters.
Right. If they are, they're looking to exploit cheap labor. And
that's a good point. You know, when the Mississippi flavor of pro business is not attracting multi-billion-dollar companies.
It's no.
Just keeping a thumb on the scale as it has been in Mississippi for, since Mississippi became Mississippi.
Exactly. So, like, hey, let's look at the results. Let's just look at, okay, how's
it been going?
How's it been going since you've implemented this very pro-business agenda in your state? How are the people who live there doing?
Yeah.
How can you answer that with a straight face and say they're doing great?
They're not doing very well.
No.
So, well, on that light note, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Workers' Mike right after this.
You're listening to the Workers' Mike, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back to the Workers' Mike on 720 WGN. I'm Phil Davidson here with Ed Maher. We've got a few minutes left in the show, Ed. And one thing that I want to discuss was, and this has been a topic on a lot of people's minds because we are in tax season.
Mm-hmm.
What are people able to deduct from their taxes when it comes to overtime?
Right.
That was one of the big...
No tax on overtime, I think, was the name of the plan, which is a pretty broad name.
Correct. It was one of the elements of the big, beautiful bill.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people got real excited about, whoa, I'm not going to have to pay tax on my overtime. This is great. I'm going to be rich. The devil's in the details, Ed.
Turns out that's the case, huh?
That is the case. There was a good article that came out that basically said, only Americans who, according to the Fair Labor Standards Act, must be paid time and a half for working more than 40 hours in a week can claim that deduction. And then only a portion of the overtime pay, the additional half in time and a half, is exempt from the federal income tax.
Oh, so you're still getting taxed on the time, but not the half.
Correct.
And does that, so if you work, I think if you work under a union agreement and the overtime is for 8 hours versus 40 hours, I think it doesn't qualify.
Correct. And no, double time does not qualify, obviously, which a lot of people make on weekends if you're working in a union job.
Yeah, baby.
So, yeah. Basically, the article was about how disappointed a lot of people are who thought that this is going to be boon times for them because of this tax policy, but it's actually a pretty narrow list of eligibility. And, this was something that the Trump administration was really selling to the American people.
I don't disagree with, if people are out there working 50, 60 hours a week, not taxing overtime, I think that's a great idea. You got to figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah, no one was booing it when he proposed it. Yeah, they're like, yeah, this is a great idea.
For sure. I mean, it had more, let's say, qualifications and loopholes than the tax cuts for billionaires did.
Correct.
That was pretty straightforward.
That was like, bank is open, what do you guys need? When it comes to the working class, it was like, yeah, actually, no, you're not quite eligible for that, but keep trying.
Yeah, you got to come back with your lawyer and...
Yeah, exactly. How much did you donate to my campaign this year? Oh, nothing. Okay, yeah, sorry, we're not going to do anything for you.
But. So the no tax on overtime, some people will get something out of it, not quite as billed, and it'll be kind of the same with no tax on tips,
right?
Because that was a pretty limited couple categories of workers that were explicitly defined in that legislation. And then, I think we put both of these things on the pile of stuff that didn't really happen, along with DOGE checks and stimulus checks and tariff checks and no more foreign wars.
And focusing on affordability didn't really pan out as
well. We just got to wait a couple election cycles until all the people that we've inspired on our show today to run for office.
Very true.
Come forward and
all our union members.
Meaningful change. Yeah, I will say this. I've got a 15-year-old daughter, and she was out on driver's ed. She's learning how to drive.
Uh-oh.
And she goes to school out in Oswego, and she was driving past a big inflatable rat, which, of course, was placed there by
the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Very familiar with it.
For sure. I'm not, so we go outside of Trader Joe's, and she sent me a text. She's like, I saw Scabby the Rat. I honked. I was just very proud of her. And then I was like, why are you not in school? And she's like, oh, I'm at, you know, driving. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Because she's an agitator. We love it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully out at Trader Joe's, we can get things sorted out for the contracted employees on the construction.
Yep.
And then we can just move that right along to the people who work there because they wear Hawaiian shirts. Back when I used to shop at Trader Joe's, I always noticed that the people were always very friendly. They seemed like a pretty, you know, happy-go-lucky workforce until you ask them how much they're made and how the scheduling works at their stores and stuff. So
they're popping up everywhere now, and like, yeah, you're never seeing an empty Trader Joe's, that's for sure.
You know, we just got to fill it with union workers.
Exactly.
So that's all the time we have for this week's show, but thank you everybody for tuning in and joining us for another Sunday morning. We appreciate you. And we'll be back with more Workers Mike next week right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers Mike was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers Mike, visit WGNradio.com.